This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. And hi again, I'm John Williams. Farron Dogs is the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. Farron, thanks for joining us again. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. Thanks again for having me. I appreciate that.
Let me ask you a few things about the market this Friday. We gave up about 500 on Wednesday, got a lot of it back. Looked like we were going to get all of it back yesterday, and we're up again today.
Right.
What's the short story about this week on the Dow and NASDAQ?
Yeah, I think the kickoff was obviously the concern over the inflation number that came out earlier in the week. And I think that put a lot of panic in the market, assuming there's going to be higher interest rates around the corner, tightening money supply and that type of thing to get that under control. And then I think what we're seeing is, you know, the retail numbers weren't exactly as great as they had hoped today. They missed their number. And so maybe the consumer is slowing down spending a little bit. So therefore, we're not having as many dollars chasing product. And then on top of that, we actually had a pretty good unemployment claims number the other day, which was the lowest since the pandemic. So those were the positives. They kind of offset some of the concerns about the inflation issues that are out there right now. And I would anticipate them being talked about all summer long.
What's up with this consumer spending? I thought we had money in our pockets and now we can go out.
I think we do. And I think that we've had money in our pockets a little more than we expected, even during the pandemic. And the retail sales did very well. The consumer carried us through a lot of the pandemic right up until, you know, this most recent report. Some of that, I think, has something to do with we are seeing prices increase. But on the other side of things, things are opening up. The weather is better. People are maybe outside being a little bit more active and not necessarily, you know, buying online and purchasing right yeah. now. So, and also the big stimulus checks came out in March, and the March number was very strong. So I think that had a little bit more money in people's pockets as well.
I was wondering about that. How are we going to wean people off this free money? Maybe this is what we're starting to see. When we stop giving money away, people stop spending it.
Right, right. And I hope you're right, because I think we do need to get back to a normal. It would be nice to have a market and a consumer that are relying on their earned income and markets relying on earnings and revenues as opposed to stimulus and Fed actions. So it would be nice to get a new normal, that's for sure. All right. Back to our normal, I should say.
Yeah, right. Maybe the new normal. I mean, I wonder what it's going to be like and how long it takes the markets or the main streets to get back to a sort of normal dynamic. It's been so long. I don't remember what that was like.
I know. Now people don't know if they should wear a mask, if they shouldn't wear a mask. There's a lot of confusion out there, and depending on which state you're in, it kind of dictates that whole normal, if you will. And you know, we are seeing a little bit of a return. I think that once we get the kids back in school and camps, and that'll make it feel even more normal for all of us. But also getting those workers back to the office environment, I think that that's going to be very big for not only the foot traffic and the businesses around those commercial buildings, but also just for, you know, just how people are feeling and kind of getting back to, okay, now I'm feeling that I can get back out there and feel more comfortable.
But a lot of folks are going to roll off of the unemployment rolls too, right?
That's correct. Yes, they are. And, you know, there's 16 states right now that are actually going to suspend the additional $300 a week that the federal government has provided. I believe they're phasing that out starting in June. And I think a lot of that is to hopefully get people back to their jobs and employers where they will be earning a living rather than having this additional money. And I'm not arguing the fact that if a person is able to make more money and they have to provide more for their family, having that incentive, you know, they're kind of crazy not to, right? But I think there is a lot to be said about getting back to work and just having, you know, just it helps the mental health issues as well. And So weaning off of that, there's a huge shortage out there for a lot of positions. I've been hearing a lot of employers are really struggling. They're providing incentives to get people back to work. You know, they're providing sign-on bonuses, and if you stay for 90 days, you get an extra bonus. And I think Arizona is even talking about providing some assistance for childcare. So,
well, can I tell you, one of the head of the Chamber of Commerce in one of the suburbs here in Chicago, in Bolingbrook, said to us the other day, he just called in, and he said that where states are denying that free money, I mean, it's a $300 unemployment supplement that you could pass through, but states are saying, no, we don't think that's a good idea. It's a disincentive. He said, what if we gave that money to the employer to give to the employee when they go back? So that bonus you're talking about would be in the guise of the unemployment supplement, which is another way to skin the cat, but at least then you get both things. I get the money and I go back to work.
Right. I would agree. That's a great idea. I think it's great for, like you said, the employer and the employee, for morale all the way around. And, you know, it gets the employer to be competitive with other employees and maybe incentivize that employee to do even a better job. You know, the service industry is really struggling. Just a personal experience, you know, we were out to dinner and the servers were just working so hard, a few people, you know, across the room were getting frustrated, and I'm thinking, you know, they're doing the best they can. They just don't have the staff that they need because there's so much pent-up demand to get back out there.
We see that everywhere here in the Chicago area. Farron Dogs is the founder and CEO, Harrison Wallace Financial Group. Visit harrisonwallace.com. It's always nice to talk to you, Farron. We'll do it again.
All right. Sounds good, John. Appreciate the time and opportunity. Have a good weekend.
In the town of Glenview, there's this place called Apt Electronics, or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe in Apt Electronics is this place called Glenview, because this is the biggest honking store you've ever seen. It's really fun to go there. And I just saw a story in the paper the other day. It said, and they're like doubling their warehouse space. John Apt, did I read that right? What's going on over there?
How you doing, John? That's a great introduction. I appreciate it. We are expanding. We're expanding. We just launched a new recycle center last month, and it went from 12,000 feet to 30,000 feet. We're recycling more than ever. And about 2 years ago, we bought the land next door, and we've just started building a new warehouse that will more than double the size of our warehouse space.
So that's the warehouse space, which is where the stuff sits. So then do you need more square footage in the showroom where we go, the store itself?
Well, the storefront's pretty big right now. And what we've done over the years, we're always expanding. We're always freshening things up in our retail showroom. And what we've done over the last 20 years since we've been in our existing space is, anytime we wanted a new showroom or expand the showroom, we'd take away from the warehouse space. So the warehouse space got a little bit smaller as the showroom got bigger, and we've really just kind of run out of room in our warehouse. So initially, we're just announcing we're making a larger warehouse. We're adding office space. We're adding a new recycle center. Eventually, I'm sure we'll tinker with the showroom.
Is it your attitude that you have to keep growing? I mean, is that what? And a lot of times when businesses do that, they keep adding franchises or stores around the country. But you just have the one store, right?
We do, and people think we're crazy. They're like, "How? You know, when you expand, you're supposed to add more stores." But you know, we're all about control here. This is an operation that takes a lot to manage, and we feel like we have better control when it's all under one roof. Mm-hmm. And we really have created a destination place for people to come. And having it all here is easier for us. It's easier for, I think, the customer, too. We're trying not to make it too big where they get lost. But, you know, it's a fun place to visit.
Well, it's manageable, if that's what you mean. But I understand the Bears are going to play their home games this year. Is that true? That's how big
we have room for that. Maybe in a parking lot somewhere they could do that.
How many, can you just give me some numbers, like how many employees, how many square footage, how much revenue goes through that store? Just tell me something about the size of the operation numerically.
Okay, we are currently our current space is about our showroom's about 100,000 feet. Our warehouse is about 350,000 square feet. We're going to add another 420 some odd square footage to that. We don't discuss revenue, but I can tell you, yes, we have grown considerably over our 85-year history. I mean, like you said, you know, businesses need to grow, and they do that by adding stores. We've done that really by listening to our customers, adding new product categories. When we started out, we were called Apt Radio. I mean, they didn't sell televisions. We did sell small appliances, but now really we sell everything for your home. You know, a lot of people don't even know this, but we sell mattresses and furniture and fitness equipment and HVAC, heating and air conditioning. And, you know, so we've really expanded our assortment, which is, again, one of the reasons we need more space.
What about those colored shirt people with the towns written on their sleeve there, on their chest? How many employees do you have?
We're just over 1,600 employees.
In a store. That's amazing.
In one store. Well, we got a lot of people out on the road, too. We've got over 500 vehicles in our fleet, and there's over 400 delivery and service trucks on the road every day. So a lot of our employees are out on the road. I'm sure you've seen our trucks running around. And as it says on the sides of the trucks, we're trying to please people since 1936.
Let's just finish with the recycling center. What can I take to the recycling center, and how does that work?
Well, we originally created the recycling center so we could recycle what we sell, appliances and electronics. But really, now we really recycle almost everything. I mean, 95% of our waste is properly recycled, and customers can bring in styrofoam and paper goods or old electronics or appliances, and it's all free to drop off here at our location. We do charge for televisions because those are quite expensive to actually recycle. But other than that, you can pretty much drop off anything. We've got a page on our website called Green Initiatives. If you go on app.com/Green Initiatives, I think you'd be able to find it. It'll give you a detailed list of anything that you can drop off here.
Anybody ever tempt you with going public?
We've had discussions, yes, many times, actually. But
like Thursday?
We like being a family business. We really do. I have four other brothers. My grandparents founded this business in the 30s. My father really spearheaded it for many, many years, and we've sort of we're trying to lead by his example. And you know, it's really, and everyone says, how do you manage? How do you maintain? All these other companies are going out of business, and you guys continue to grow. And it's really, I think, falls back to the stuff we learned from our parents and our grandparents, just really providing proper service that people, you know, treat a customer right, and they'll keep coming back, and that's really helped us over the years.
And one last little thing here, but I suppose last year, as terrible as it was for everybody, did you guys manage okay just because of people's interest in consumer electronics? Maybe the store wasn't open all of the time or to capacity, but I suspect business was okay for you?
Business was good. We were open the entire pandemic. We were deemed an essential business, and our people were, even our delivery guys, you know, and service people were running in and out of people's homes. God bless them. It was kind of a scary time, but it was busy. I mean, people were stuck at home. They were not going on trips. They were not going to restaurants. So they were fixing up their houses or using their houses more than ever. So things started to break, and things needed to be upgraded. So it was overall a good year for us. But we're definitely seeing this. I'm sure you've heard about shortages and things like that. We're really trying to maintain stock levels, and we have more inventory in our warehouse than we ever have. But it's been a challenge to get product and to get it out there. So
nice to talk to you today, John. It's just good to catch up, and continued success to the folks at Apt in Glenview. Thanks for visiting with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, they got that recycling center and the warehouse bigger than ever. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. I'm John Williams. Tim McCormick's our next guest, the chief executive officer at SOS Children's Villages, Illinois. May is Foster Care Month. Tim, you're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, John, and thank you for allowing us to have this moment to tell our story in this very special month to bring attention to foster care here.
What is SOS Children's Villages? I'm reading a little bit about it. It sounds intriguing, and it sure sounds different, but what do you all do?
So, John, it's somewhat of an alternative model of foster care. So roughly, there's almost 500,000 children in foster care in the United States. In Illinois, about 18,000. And what we do is we literally build homes large enough so siblings can be together. Of those 500,000 children, 75% of them get separated when they go into out-of-home care. So there's another level of trauma that occurs. And what we do is really four key things. We build individual homes. We are able to keep siblings together. We do that in a kind of an intentional community, a village-type model, and I'll explain that in a second. And then the secret sauce is this full-time foster parent. We go out into the community and ask people, almost like the Peace Corps, come uproot your life and live in our communities and provide unconditional love to children who need healing and support. And it all seems to work well.
Do these adults that are living with the children in these homes you build, is it a married couple? Do they have their own children?
It's the array of what the world is. It's all shapes, sizes, colors, everything involved. And I think it's very interesting. So we have three villages. Our first village is out in Lockport, Illinois, near Joliet. And then we have two villages in the city of Chicago in the Auburn-Gresham neighborhood in the Lower West Side and around Roosevelt and Racine. And, you know, it's a site where really unconditional love kind of transcends everything. And but because of what is kind of occurring with children when they come into out-of-home care, we're able to train and develop these foster parents. So their only job is to work for SOS. And so it's almost like being a triage nurse and a teacher and an alderman in the city of Chicago. You're mediating so many things. And so we go out into the community and ask people to think about this kind of important life. And if you think about it, being a foster parent, really, and receiving a child into your home is a very noble and important act for us as a society.
So I suppose that adult gets a paycheck, but also they get lodging. They're living in that home then, right?
Correct. So the homes are owned by SOS, and we think it's kind of like move in. This is your work-from-home office.
Yeah.
And you'll have six children here in your care, up to six children in your care. And we'll provide all the support you need so that you can focus on the children. And really what it does in the foster care system is make the child kind of the center of the social dialogue or social narrative of our community. And we've been able to see results. So only 48% of children in foster care will ever graduate high school. I've been doing this for 17 years, and we've had 100% high school graduation. We've focused a lot in on education, and I know you were talking about this week on the show, how important education is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we really do three things. We begin the healing process for young lives. We provide the right tools in the toolbox, and oftentimes that's education, but it's nutrition and counseling and so on. And then we help that child and that family move to where they need to go.
How long will a child be in that home? Is there a rotation of new kids coming and going through that adult's house?
Yeah, the industry has changed. When I first got here, there were literally children growing up in the village, and that was their kind of forever home. And now we've become kind of this oasis. So we will take children into the SOS home. And normally we get sibling groups of three and more, so it's a little bit longer time for children to be in our care. So about 2.5 years, 3 years, but some stay, you know, longer depending on the circumstances. And during that time, we also work with the birth parents to help, where that's feasible, to help get a family reunited.
Is that the ultimate goal?
Well, yeah, I think the ultimate goal is you know, not to linger in foster care and spend your whole life in foster care, but to help those children and that family maximize what their potential is. And, you know, it's very rewarding to see when feasible, children returning back home or returning to a family member. But when that's not possible, then moving into a pre-adoptive home and moving into adoption or guardianship. And, you know, more recently, a lot of the bonding has come with our foster parents, and then oftentimes they will move to adopt those children.
Do you need more adults? Do you need more parents? Do you need more homes? What can we do for you in Foster Care Awareness Month?
John, that's a very good question, and certainly appreciate it. I think really three things. I think the more people get informed about what's going on in foster care, I think, and this is the thing, I think, that's the first piece. I think for people to visit our website at sosillinois.org, there's really two opportunities, and I was listening earlier, and you had John Apt on, they've been a supporter. Wintrust has certainly been a supporter. You know, a lot of good businesses. I met with the CEO of BorgWarner today, and, you know, this is about social investment, right? So I appreciate, John, you giving us this opportunity to show that. And so I think as businesses getting involved and saying, okay, this is part of our responsibility, and what mm-hmm. can we do, and how mm-hmm. can we become a better business? And certainly individuals, by visiting our website, can donate and find out more opportunities. And then the last thing, for those who would say, you know what, I'm going to have the commitment to change a child's life story, I'm going to think about becoming an SOS foster parent, and we would certainly welcome that.
Let's all do that right now, sosillinois.org. At least think about that. Maybe you can donate goods and services. Maybe it's money. Maybe it's you, sosillinois.org. Tim, continued success, and thanks for doing what you're doing over there.
Well, we appreciate this opportunity. Thanks. On behalf of over 500 children we serve each year, we thank you.
Tim McCormick is the Chief Executive Officer of SOS Children's Villages, Illinois, sosillinois.org. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new life sciences building is being planned for Fulton Market in Chicago. The 500,000-square-foot development would add to a growing cluster of properties housing pharmaceutical and biotechnology research companies and their laboratories. Chicago developer Mark Goodman is behind the project, which includes a 19-story lab and office building at 400 North Elizabeth. That's at the western edge of the former meatpacking district. Portillo's is investing in a delivery startup. The local hot dog chain is putting money behind Cartwheel, an on-demand delivery platform for restaurants and retailers. The Los Angeles startup announced a $1 million round of funding yesterday that included the Portillo's investment. Portillo's has been a Cartwheel customer using the startup in its delivery operations. The company says it liked the service so much it decided to invest. Chicago Inno reports Cartwheel is the first ever startup investment for Portillo's. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Rexton.
What are we going to do? Road trip.
Sounds like a great idea, particularly with the weather warming up. Might I suggest a road trip to tiny Mount Pulaski? It's a town in central Illinois, population about 1,500. The town, named after a familiar name to Chicagoans, Revolutionary War hero Casimir Pulaski, has its own Pulaski Day just like Chicago. The town has lots of historical landmarks. It's situated on a slight hill overlooking acres of productive farmland. It's about a three-hour drive from Chicago. WCIA-TV in Champaign reports that the town lost its only grocery store a while back. So the town leaders, many of them farmers, decided, hey, we can do this. They started up their own store stocked with food from their own farms. Local farmer Sean Tyson says the store has been open about a year and is a big success.
We've definitely expanded our selection. Sam's done a great job filling the store with local food. And you'll see like local wines and particularly our deli and our baked goods that you see in the cabinet behind you have been really, really popular.
Tyson also says the store is making many local farmers successful.
The best part about this, I think, is the opportunity that this gave local farmers to scale up. So you've got a couple of local farmers, whether it's a produce guy or a beef guy like myself, we took our farms to the next level where it was a profitable enterprise.
And Tyson says you might even pick up a cool souvenir.
When they come to look at historical items like our museum or the courthouse on the square, we're just a natural fit for them to come in and have that, or maybe even a souvenir t-shirt, like we had a guy from Chicago came in and he grabbed one of those and took it back so he'd tell all his friends, I went to that place in Mount Pulaski, so.
Wear that t-shirt proudly. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Let's spend those last 10 with Greg McBride, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate. Welcome back, Greg.
Good afternoon, John. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. I'm looking at your survey. You asked people about their financial regrets and what they're going to try and do to be less regretful in the future. Is this something you guys do consistently, this survey?
It is. It's something we've looked at dating back to about 2016. So interesting to draw some similarities and some contrasts between what we see now versus what we saw pre-pandemic. I think the biggest one of those, you know, not really a surprise, regrets about emergency savings have bubbled to the top. And in years past, that wasn't the number one regret people pointed to. But given the financial disruption many households have experienced or witnessed over the last year or so, it bubbled to the top of financial regrets this year.
I suppose an emergency expense in the past would be a gigantic unexpected medical bill or the appliances broke. But when it's a pandemic, the whole year was an emergency, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, prolonged unemployment or just income disruption. Those that were going to work but making a lot less because, you know, they were operating under, businesses operating under reduced hours or, you know, various constraints. More than 40% of households we have found had seen a hit to their income during the pandemic. And for, you know, a lot of those households, if they had emergency savings, they were burning through it. And if they didn't have emergency savings or didn't have much, they were certainly wishing they had more.
Yeah, I see number one is not having enough money for emergency expenses, which presumes that some of us think we do have money set aside for a just in case. But 20% said that was the number one on your list, not enough money for emergency expenses. Number two was not saving enough for retirement early enough. Number three, regret taking too much credit card debt. I would have thought that would have historically been number one. And number four, 10% regret taking on too much student loan debt. Just talk about those big four there. Are they jockeying for position? Is that about where they normally are?
Well, the not saving for retirement early enough has traditionally been, and when I say traditionally, I'm saying pre-pandemic, that was the number one concern for several years running. And now it's sort of slipped to a close second given the pandemic. But that's when that one has traditionally bubbled to the top. Taking on too much credit card debt actually really surged again during this pandemic. Prior to that, it was a much lower concern. In fact, what we see is twice as many people now pointing to that as their top regret as was the case back in 2017. So an indication there of just, you know, how much that has jumped up in recent years. And taking on too much student loan debt, that one has been pretty consistent. That was up slightly from pre-pandemic levels, but, you know, it's pretty consistent with readings that we had back to 2016. And as you can imagine, that's a regret that does skew much more heavily toward younger consumers more so than those in middle age.
That's been kind of a fascinating topic of conversation, that student debt, since there's a lot of folks still hoping that the Biden administration is just going to make $10,000 of that go away.
I think a lot of people are hoping that more than $10,000 of it's going to go away. That's certainly a hot button topic for those that have student loan debt, as well as for those that do not, you know, those that either didn't go to school or those that, they worked two jobs and had other savings and so that they could avoid taking on debt. You know, that's one that tends to strike a nerve with a lot of different consumers from various walks of life.
Oh, we all know there's somebody who will have made their last student loan payment the day this announcement gets made, and they're going to call my show. But, you know, credit card debt is an interesting one, too, because we paid down a lot of our credit card debt. Americans are carrying less of that right now, right?
Absolutely. That's one of the vestiges of the financial crisis, is that since then, you know, we talk about these recessions and what lasting impact does that have on financial behavior. The lasting impact on financial behavior from the last recession was that people really paid down debt. They were averse to taking on more debt. And, you know, credit cards, I think, really front and center there. Yes, people did really pay down debt. We saw a lot of people moving away from credit cards just as, you know, as a way to, you know, avoid adding debt. And so as we find ourselves coming out of another recession, you know, not a surprise to see those that may have still been carrying credit card debt now have much higher regrets about doing so, given the strain that puts on a budget when household income takes a dip.
These are our regrets, but people then say, okay, armed with that, what am I going to do about it? And again, number one is not saving enough for emergency expenses. Two is retirement early enough. Number three, too much credit card debt and student loan debt, the big four. The number one thing people say they're going to do about this is what?
They said they're going to save more for emergencies. So not only did that emerge as the top regret that people have financially this year, it's also number one in terms of what lasting change are you going to make. So, you know, I think we talked about where people paid down debt and grew debt averse after the financial crisis. I think there here's an indication that, you know, some of this money that's landed in savings accounts, you know, be it from stimulus payments or whatever, that some of that is going to stick around, that you know, people have, they've taken mental note of the importance of that emergency savings, even if they weren't directly impacted. And so I do expect you're going to see the needle moving much more in the early stages of the economic recovery than what we had seen last time around.
A fourth of us say, by golly, I'm going to save more money for emergencies. 21% said we're going to spend less. What's your comment or thought about that?
Well, I mean, that, you know, certainly kind of goes hand in hand with either save more or the regrets about debt. I mean, if you're spending less, less likelihood that you're, you know, leaning on the crutch of credit to support a lifestyle. If you're spending less, well, then it gives you avenue to save more, whether that's for emergencies, retirement, or other financial goals.
And then plans for the people, the other ones are carry less debt, find more stable income, and save more for retirement. That stable income thing is interesting, too, because a lot of people aren't going back to the jobs they had for a variety of reasons. But you do imagine that the labor market's really in flux right now, and people are going to try and find something that they like better or that pays better.
Yeah, I mean, particularly the way that the impact on household income fell during the pandemic and the ensuing economic shutdown, it was lower income households that really bore the brunt of that. And so that we do see, you know, for example, households earning less than $30,000 a year, they're seven times as likely as any other group to say that their finances have been negatively impacted by the pandemic.
Sure. Greg McBride is the Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate. Read more about this at Bankrate.com. Greg, we'll visit again. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it.